I've always been a huge believer in signs. In my experience, before something extraordinary happens, good or bad, there are always signs that it was going to happen, tells, ways people give themselves away before they do what they ultimately do.
Milwaukee police found body parts in a Northside apartment, and now they wonder if they've uncovered some kind of death factory.
Jeffrey Dahmer was a serial killing cannibal, responsible for the death and dismemberment of 17 victims.
There were human heads and bones, and every drawer we opened, every cabinet we opened, there was body parts.
But long before he ever murders anyone, he exhibits signs, disturbing signs, that something is seriously wrong with him. As a young kid, he enjoys killing and mutilating animals. That was a really bad sign that should not have been ignored, but tragically, it was.
In 1985, grad student John Hauser picked up a booby-trapped notebook. The blast blew his fingers off.
And before Unabomber Ted Kaczynski starts sending out letter bombs in the mail and winds up killing 3 people and injuring 23 others, there were signs that something was seriously wrong with him. Years earlier, he quits his job as a math professor out of the blue with no explanation, moves to Montana, becomes a hermit, and writes extensively about the dozens of detailed murder fantasies he's having. All signs that something is really askew with Ted Kaczynski, but no one in his life picks up on it until he actually starts killing people. Con artists oftentimes give themselves away too when they're young.
Mayor Smith passed herself off as an Irish heiress and a member of nobility to cheat hardworking entertainment industry insiders out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. But it was swindled TV producer Jonathan Walton who'd become a close friend, who finally brought Smith's con days to an end.
The con woman who scammed me out of almost 100 grand as a child would go out of her way to convince other children to do weird and unusual things. Like going into a stranger's house by convincing another little girl that it's her house. That was actually one of my scammer's first cons. She didn't get any money from it. She was only 11 years old. But she did get the thrill and the practice of tricking someone into doing something they would otherwise never do. And that's Con Artistry 101 right there. In reality, the signs that a child or a teenager will grow up to be a con artist are all there from day one. You just have to know what to look for. I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Hardcore Con. Episode 4, The Homeless Billionaire. It's the early 1980s now, in Alberta, Canada. There's this really creepy funeral home off 5th Street and 16th Avenue, and an 18-year-old kid named Daryl Heiligsitzer is its director. In fact, Daryl is the youngest funeral home director in Western Canada, but he really shouldn't be. Because his moral compass is off, way off, and his sense of right and wrong appears to be non-existent.
He was embalming bodies from a very young age.
That's Glenda Toews, author of the books Spinning on a Barstool and Spun. She's known Daryl for a long time and knows him better than most at this point, as does a woman named Sandra Beard.
So Sandra was Daryl's childhood friend.
And one day, when Sandra and Daryl are teenagers heading out to go skiing, a work thing pops up for Daryl.
And he's like, I've got some paperwork I need to drop off at the funeral home. Do you mind if we stop there first? And she's like, yeah, okay. They get in his Toyota truck.
And Daryl drives Sandra to the funeral home where he works. And as she's sitting there on the drive over in the passenger seat of that Toyota truck with the radio blasting the Steve Miller Band, Sandra's feeling a little uneasy. I mean, she's just a teenager, and she's never been to a funeral home before. She knows that there are dozens and dozens of dead bodies there. And the whole thing kind of freaks her out.
They get to the funeral home. He's there. He's got his own keys to the funeral home. He's like, come on in. I'll show you around. And she's like, okay.
And when they get inside, it almost looks like the lobby of a hotel. Almost. Sandra looks around. Nothing seems too scary or out of the ordinary. But then...
he took her through the chapel, into the urn room, and then he took her to the embalming room. And there was a body on a gurney with a sheet covering it. And she was kind of grossed out. She's like, this isn't right. Like, this isn't right. And he's like, come on in. Like, don't worry about it. Like, just come on in. Have a look.
The smell of that embalming room is enough to make anyone sick to their stomach. And Sandra is thoroughly disgusted. But the more she resists wanting to look at that dead body under the sheet, the more Daryl implores her to, almost forces her to. Sandra is really put off by all the tubes and laboratory equipment and scalpels.
And he's like, don't worry about it. None of this hurts them.
At this point, for the first time in her teenage life, Sandra is now standing over a dead body. It's covered with a sheet. But it's terrifyingly obvious what's under that sheet. I mean, you can see the toes poking up and the outline of a head and shoulders. Sandra suddenly realizes that the very premise that got her here in the first place, Daryl claiming that he had to drop off some paperwork at the funeral home, is a lie. A clever ruse disguised to trick Sandra into standing exactly where she's standing. Over a dead body, literally the last place on earth she'd ever want to be. In a sense, Daryl got her here, tricked her here, against her will, which is the exact reason he did it. Because Daryl knows Sandra would never want to be standing 6 inches from a corpse, but the challenge of getting her to do just that excites him and makes him feel powerful. And then, all of a sudden,
he lifted up the sheet and exposed the waxy leg of the dead person, put his hands into a fist, and punched the leg. And Sandra's like, Daryl, don't do that. And he's like, why? He can't feel anything. And she goes, no, Daryl, you just punched somebody's grandpa.
Somebody's grandpa. Remember, Daryl is only 18 years old at this point. Physically, an adult. But mentally, still a child, blissfully unaware that his utter lack of morals and ethics is on full display for Sandra and everyone else in his life to bear witness to. Daryl hasn't learned how to conceal his true nature yet. Oh, but he will. There's another time, not long after this disturbing incident with Sandra, where Daryl reveals his egregious lack of empathy and morality to his close friends.
Daryl had been working on a teenage girl who had died in a car accident. And he phoned up his two buddies and he said, hey, I'm working on her. She's naked. Do you want to come and see? So the two buddies are like, okay, this sounds cool. Let's go see a dead teenage girl. Anyways, they get there. They're down in the embalming room. Then all of a sudden, three of them hear steps, footsteps, and muffled voices. And Daryl quickly shoves the two buddies in a closet because, of course, they're not supposed to be there. Leaves them in the closet, goes running upstairs. You can hear him talking with whoever it is upstairs. In the meantime, the two buddies are in the closet going, oh man, this is so stupid. Why did we agree to this? This is dumb. We're going to go to hell for this. We're really going to go to hell for this. I don't care when Daryl comes back, I'm leaving. Nothing is worth doing this. And besides, they were like in an embalming room surrounded by dead bodies. So a short while later, Daryl comes back down the stairs. He's ready to show him the poor teenage girl. And the buddies are like, nope, man, we're out of here. This is just royally fucked.
Keep in mind, Daryl is not just some teenage punk who breaks into this place. He's the funeral director here, This is his place of business. But clearly, he doesn't care about the concept of right and wrong in human decency. And that turns out to be a huge red flag and a disturbing harbinger of what Daryl would become years later. If you're like me, then what's for dinner can be a complicated question to answer. I thank my lucky stars I found Omaha Steaks. Dinner's handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And the quality of these steaks is just out of this world, better than anything I've ever bought in a supermarket. They've got ribeyes for special occasions, juicy burgers for a cookout, grilling chicken, seafood, and gourmet franks. Omaha Steaks has what you want. They even have delicious sides, dessert, and more. So a great dinner is minutes away. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, not minutes. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code Walton. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does what. Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code Walton. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So you've heard me talk about BetterHelp for a long time, but I don't know if we've actually ever talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out for yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. The reviews are updated every day with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. More than 6 million people have used BetterHelp globally. The consistent feedback from real users makes it easy to see why so many people continue to choose BetterHelp. BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started, answer a few questions, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, and switch therapists at any time if it's not the right fit. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. It's 2020 now, at Corky's Irish Pub in Chilliwack, Canada. The smell of their famous bangers and mash fills the air. Sadly, though, they're making less bangers and mash than they used to, because they're hurting for business.
It was a pandemic. We were at half capacity.
Glenda Toews is working as a waitress at Corky's for more than a decade at this point.
I am a high school dropout, a waitress in a pub. I live in a fifth wheel in a forest.
What's it like living in a fifth wheel in the forest in Canada? I imagine the winters are brutal.
Yes, the worst part about that is your plumbing freezing. So we have heaters underneath the RV.
Chilliwack is a small, bucolic Canadian city about 20 miles north of the U.S. border at Washington State. It's surrounded by a series of tall mountain peaks, dissected by huge rivers and lakes. The air is clean and fresh here, and everywhere you turn looks like a painting by Claude Monet or Thomas Cole. The beauty and grandeur of Chilliwack will take your breath away. But Glenda Toews can't appreciate any of that now. She's stuck inside, waiting tables at Corky's, hoping for business to pick up as the pandemic drags on. all of a sudden, a man walks in, a man she's never seen before. He looks to be in his late 60s or early 70s. He's got thick gray hair and kind eyes, and he moves slowly and deliberately as he takes a seat at the bar. What was your first impression of him?
When he walked through the door in the pub, our pub is huge, right? And I was at the back patio door, and he was walking in towards the bar. And he sort of walked in with a limp. He was kind of hunched. And my very first thought was that he was homeless, because that's how the homeless people in Chilliwack carry themselves. So, and then I went closer to him, and then I felt bad because he was very clean and he smelled good. And the homeless people aren't clean and they don't smell good. So then I felt bad. I was like, oh, you know. And then he sat down. He was very polite. He's like, can we sit here? Just very polite, very ordinary. He didn't wear jewelry. He wasn't flashy. He wore ordinary clothes. Like, he was just ordinary. His hair needed a cut.
The man introduces himself as Daryl Schmidt, but he's lying. He's not Daryl Schmidt at all. He's Daryl Heiligsetzer, who decades earlier is that 18-year-old funeral director sneaking his friends into the embalming room to poke and prod and desecrate the bodies of dead people. Word on the street is, he actually gets drummed out of the funeral home business and is blacklisted after he's caught stealing. But waitress Glenda Toes has no way of knowing any of that now. To her, Daryl is just a new customer at Corky's, and she waits on him again and again over the course of weeks. While he's not a great tipper, he is a great storyteller.
He would just tell me little stories. In Canada, we have one restaurant. It's called the Cactus Club. Everyone on the West Coast knows it. He's like, oh, well, you know, me and my friend started that. He knew all of the ins and outs of the business and what's going on with Chilliwack. Like, people would come in, I'd hear realtors talking about things, but I already knew that because Daryl already told me.
Daryl appears to have his finger on the pulse of everything business related. Turns out he's kind of a mogul, or so it seems.
He owned casinos. He got his start actually in Cayman Islands. The Gambinos came down and visited him one day. And he's like, I saw how you run your businesses. I'd like you to consider coming to Vegas and running MGM. And it went on from there. So MGM was his first casino he was running. And then he had lots of stories revolving these experiences. And then he just started buying casinos all over the world.
Daryl has a lot of what I call stories from faraway places. It's a major red flag I write extensively about in my book, Anatomy of a Con Artist. The kinds of stories from faraway places that Daryl's telling here are hard to prove false off the top of your head. And the way the mind works, when you can't prove something's false, you just accept it as true. That's what Glenda does. Daryl says he's a billionaire, a casino magnate, a restaurateur, a philanthropist. And he's got a ton of living, breathing stories from faraway places to confirm everything. And all of these stories just roll off his tongue with a palpable certainty and confidence. There's no hesitation. There's no stutter. There's no searching for words. Daryl effortlessly talks the talk. But when Glenda makes an offhanded remark to Daryl, telling him that he doesn't look like any billionaire she's ever seen, he's got the perfect comeback.
He hated wealthy people who flaunted themselves. So he's like, the real wealthy people, Glenda, hide. Like, they don't want people to know they're wealthy. They don't shout it out. And that, to me, that made sense, because if I was wealthy, yeah, I don't want people to know.
And there are people like that. Famously, Sam Walton, he is dead now, God rest his soul, but he started Walmart and he became a billionaire very quietly. And he was notorious for going into his stores dressed like a schlub, almost like a homeless old man, walking around just to see how customers were reacting to the stuff, to see how his employees were acting. And no one would have ever suspected this guy's a billionaire. So there is some truth to what he told you.
Yeah. So, and to me, it made perfect sense.
And in case you're wondering what the hell a billionaire like Daryl is doing in Chilliwack, Canada, instead of, say, Saint-Tropez, or the Maldives, or the Seychelles, or any other billionaire playground, Daryl has a perfectly logical explanation for that, too.
He told me he was from the Cayman Islands, and his wife is Canadian, and they came up for her daughter's graduation. She was guessing culinary school. They couldn't get back to the Cayman Islands because she wasn't a Cayman citizen. So he could go back, but the pandemic, they had shut the island down. So he decided he was going to stay here with his wife.
Did you meet his wife?
So it was his lady friend. I kind of think she was also being conned.
So is this a situation where he's with this woman and he's telling you it's his wife, or even better and more clever on his part, he's with this woman. In previous conversations, he told you he had a wife, and now you're just assuming that's his wife.
Correct.
Although she never said, I'm his wife.
No, you just assume. So he's like, my wife, blah, blah, blah. She would come, he's like, she's just had foot surgery. So, you know, and she would come in on a knee scooter.
Daryl's stories have so many intricate details, which makes them sound really believable. Because when a regular person lies, and you question them incessantly, they run out of details pretty quickly. And at that point, you can usually tell they're lying. But when a professional con artist lies, the more questions you ask, the more intricate details they spew. It's their innate skill. Details, details, details.
They give the impression he must be telling the truth. He's got so many details. The Cayman Islands, the daughter, the culinary school. She can't get back. It's the pandemic. Cayman Islands won't let her back in. Like, so many details, which make you think, oh, this is all true, but no.
And I think that the more stranger the detail, the more you believe it, because you'd be like, you'd have to be insane to lie about that. I don't, you know, you're like, who would lie about something like that? Like, you would get caught lying about that. It must be true, right?
And the other thing that makes Daryl a brilliant con artist is his penchant for performing. For months, every time Glenda walks by Daryl's table, he's talking on his phone. I mean, he's pretending to be talking on his phone about million-dollar deals.
I made $20 million for him last year, and I'm done rolling over.
About turning away desperate investors.
We're at market saturation now. I'm not taking in any more money. I'm sorry.
About trying to help a less fortunate friend turn $1,000 into $1 million with his latest investment opportunity.
I love you too, man. You don't need to thank me.
Glenda is impressed with Daryl's apparent Midas touch. She witnesses these dramatic phone calls for 4 months. And now that his latest investment, Glenda eavesdrops, is blowing up big, she wants in.
If I hear him talking about it again, I'm going to ask him about it.
And at that point, Glenda gets up the nerve to ask Daryl if she can invest in his latest venture.
Of course you can, Glenda. I consider you a friend now. I'm happy to help you any way I can.
So it's important to note here that Daryl never asks Glenda for money. Instead, he creates just the right kind of fictitious scenario to trick Glenda into offering to give him money. My con artist did the same thing to me. And this tactic actually helps a lot of professional scammers avoid criminal prosecution. Because police will oftentimes say, you offered to give them your money, so it's not a crime. But they're wrong. Grand theft by inducement, or by false pretense, is a felony. It's just a bitch to prove in court. Ask me how I know.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Marianne Smith, guilty of the crime of grand theft.
As for Daryl,
the way his investments worked, it was a hedge fund out of Seattle. So he's like, well, every $100 would likely, Danny says, because Danny's his hedge fund guy in Seattle, Danny says that it will, you know, maybe be about $100,000, give or take. And I'm like, wow, I could help so many people's student loans and down payments on houses and stuff like that.
So basically every $100 would be worth $100,000 in a year.
In a year. Yeah.
Wow.
So Glenda scrounges together all the money she can get her hands on, which is approximately $70,000, and she hands it to Daryl to invest. And she waits. Months go by. Daryl is still coming into the pub every single day, assuring her that her $70,000 is growing fast. And it'll be worth more than $1 million before the year is out. And Glenda plans to use some of that money to help homeless people and shore up the school system in Chilliwack and start a nonprofit called the Foundation of Hope. But nearing the 12-month mark, where Daryl is supposed to hand Glenda the first return on her $70,000 investment, it's just not happening. And Daryl's got all kinds of excuses.
You know, we're sort of just waiting for the pandemic to... And then, of course, the Ukraine war starts. Danny's his hedge fund guy. Danny's hedge funds are being audited to make sure that there's no old oligarchy activity.
He would use the news headlines of the day and the calamity happening in the world, in the pandemic, the war breaks out in Ukraine, my financial guy's getting audited, as reasons why you are expecting payments and these payments are not materializing. And that's why, because of... And you could prove these things because you could read about them happening. So it just strikes you as, oh, this is real.
Yeah, yeah, because everything's falling into, you know, the climate of our what was going on at the time.
And not long after Daryl's excusapalooza, someone sends Glenda a news report from years earlier revealing who Daryl Schmidt really is.
A Calgary man, Daryl Heiligsetzer, is in jail tonight. He was described by a judge as an economic predator when he was sentenced a decade ago to 7 years in prison for a $1.5 million investment fraud case, and he's now facing similar new charges.
You'd think Glenda would be shocked and outraged by this news, that the man she gave $70,000 to invest, is a convicted scammer. But Glenda's shock and outrage actually take a back seat.
My very first instinct was relief, because then I knew the truth.
Yeah, because up until that point, you're just guessing, can't figure out where is this money, why hasn't it come?
Yeah, this was going on for like 15 months. And it's exhausting to be sort of, and you can't plan your future because you think you're going to be a CEO of this Foundation of Hope. I was studying our community to find out how best that I could help them, right? Visiting teachers and finding out what we can the best do to serve the community in that way. So I'm doing all of that, thinking this is gonna happen, which added to the humiliation at the end of it, because now I have to go and tell these people that it was a scam.
Gosh.
Their help is not coming, no help is coming.
The first con Daryl is ever convicted of and serves 5 years in jail for is an elaborate investment scam, a Ponzi scheme back in 2005, whereby Daryl fakes starting a company that buys used hockey equipment on the cheap and resells it to sporting goods stores all over the world for huge profits. None of that is real, but the intricate details makes it sound really real to investors. And Daryl dupes dozens of victims out of nearly $3 million, gets busted, goes to jail for 5 years, and then, while he's out on parole, he starts a whole new scam and is busted again in 2015. And he spends 4.5 more years behind bars for conning $400,000 out of 45 investors who earnestly believed Daryl was buying a casino and was going to make them all very wealthy. It's the same kind of story he sells waitress Glenda Toes over the course of a year coming into Corky's Irish pub every day.
And did you ever confront Daryl?
I sure did. So I actually sent him the newspaper article. His immediate response was, "Who sent that to you? I am going to go through, I'm getting Doug, his head of security. I'm getting Doug to go through all of your email, Glenda. You know I can do it," because by this time he was like the owner of Amazon, Google, whatever. He owned everything. So, and I'm like, yeah, go ahead. So the next day he actually came to the pub. I'm devastated at this point because...
The balls on that guy.
Yeah, he came to the pub and I'm like, "You're going to have to leave, Daryl, because I just..." He's like, "I should have known better. I should not have come in. I understand. I'm so sorry, but please can you come to a different pub? So characters with another pub we would go to. He's like, can you please come so I can explain myself? So I finished my shift. I drove over to characters. He's sitting there looking all really sad. And I sit down. He's like, I am Daryl Hollett-Setzer. I did go into business. They were dirty cops. I changed my name because people have a stigma with people in prison. And he was going on. And you know, she was so good. I just wanted to believe him.
And that's the thing. You did want to believe him. Because if he was telling the truth, that would mean you hadn't wasted a whole like year of your life pursuing this insanity that was never going to happen and lost all that money.
I wanted to believe him, and I just...
Did you believe him?
And I looked at him and I said, the newspaper said you were very good. And he actually kind of like smirked a little bit. Like
he was proud?
Well, like, you know, and then it went away and he was devastated. It was like just this fleeting little look, right? And I was like, but I caught it.
But here's the biggest takeaway from this entire con. And you all need to pay close attention to what I'm about to explain, because it can have drastic and powerful ramifications in your own lives. Remember near the beginning of this episode when I asked Glenda,
what was your first impression of him?
My very first thought was that he was homeless. And then I went closer to him, and then I felt bad because he was very clean and he smelled good. And the homeless people aren't clean and they don't smell good. So then I felt bad.
So out of the gate, Glenda's gut tells her Daryl is homeless. And in actuality, he is homeless. He's recently been released from jail after serving 4+ years for that casino investment scam. And he's living in a homeless shelter. So when he walks in the Corky's Irish Pub that day back in 2020, Glenda's gut is right on the money. He's homeless. Her first impression is spot on. But Glenda does what so many of us do. She ignores her instincts because she doesn't want to be rude or mean or unfriendly. And Daryl has a captivating energy. All professional con artists do. And he gets Glenda to fall in like with him and admire him within the first 5 minutes of meeting him. Remember, con artist is short for confidence artist, and Daryl gains Glenda's confidence almost immediately that first day. And over the course of a year, she gets really close to him.
That was the sort of the biggest sorrow is my best friend like died that day because he didn't exist.
He never existed. And that's the double whammy of the punch, because A, you got conned, you lost your money, that hurts. But then also, this guy that you thought you knew that was your quote-unquote best friend, who you would have given your life for, sworn, and yet none of that was real. He didn't own casinos, he didn't have all this money, he's not a financial investor, do-gooder, philanthropic billionaire. He's a homeless man living at the Salvation Army who tricked all of you, very convincingly for a very long time.
Yes, very much so.
Now, because of the time constraints of this podcast, I'm only giving you 20% of this incredible story. There are so many more crazy details I had to nix for time. But Glenda Toews wrote 2 whole books about Daryl. The first one is titled Spinning on a Barstool, and the follow-up is called Spun. I'm putting a link to both in the show notes. And get this, Glenda only writes these books because when she goes to police to report Daryl,
they told me there was nothing that I could do. I'm like, well, what can I do? I need to go warn people. No, you can't warn people. And I'm like, what do you mean I can't warn people? And I'm like, what can I do? And they're like, you can just tell your experience. And I'm like, so I can tell my story. Yeah, you can tell your story. So I'm like, okay, well, I wrote a book. That book went on to win some awards. So now I'm a high school dropout and an award-winning author.
Wow.
After Glenda goes public with her con story, Daryl flees Chilliwack. He was last spotted 6 months ago, about 80 miles west, in Duncan, British Columbia. And I have no doubt he's probably still scamming. Hardcore Con was created, written, and hosted by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producer, Evan Goldstein. All editing and sound design was done by Jimmy O'Holligan. My book, Anatomy of a Con Artist, The 14 Red Flags to Spot Scammers, Grifters, and Thieves, is available everywhere books are sold, in print and audio, so it's like a podcast. And I recorded my audiobook in the same exact West Hollywood sound studio that Meryl Streep used to record her audiobook, so I feel like you can kind of hear that in my read. Make sure you subscribe to Jonathan Walton Media on whatever podcast platform you're listening on so you can get alerts when new episodes drop and new seasons. And if you've got a story you think deserves its own podcast, pitch it to me at jonathanwalton.com. Hey everyone, Jonathan Walton here. If you are in the Nashville area, I'm doing a live one-man show Sunday, August 23rd, 2 p.m. at the Marquee Theater downtown. You can buy tickets on my website, jonathanwalton.com. My show is called Hunting the Irish Heiress. It's about the crazy con woman who scammed me, Mayor Smith, aka the Irish Heiress.
Living in Belfast, and my family and I had a huge fight.
Well, she's out of jail, and she could be scamming you or someone you love right now. Did you know she started a satanic church?
Satan, my father, I summon you.
And she also created a phony nonprofit to run rescue missions in Ukraine.
We are doing medical evacuations and refugee evacuations. Our safe house is in Pavlohrad.
I'm showing audiences all the crazy pictures and videos and audio recordings of all her new scams. So come see me live performing my one-man show, Hunting the Irish Heiress, in Nashville at the Marquee Theater downtown, Sunday, August 23rd, 2 p.m. It's funny, it's dramatic, it's bonkers, and audiences are raving.
That was better than a Netflix.
For tickets, go to my website, jonathanwalton.com. Also, I'd love to perform my one-man show, Hunting the Irish Heiress, in your city. So if you know of a theater or playhouse that wants to host a compelling new show, go to jonathanwalton.com and let me know.